Well, we got John back with us tonight. I think he's finished it up tonight. John's done a great job, and I have really enjoyed it. And I sure do thank him for coming over here and doing the steps for us this month. And let's give him a big welcome. Come on up, John.
I'm John Kelly. I'm a grateful recovered alcoholic. And my sobriety date is September the 4th, 1999. And I'm pretty darn happy about that. So is my family. So is a lot of people who came in contact with me back in the day. We're finishing up. Before I get rolling, I was just going to say, I saw Dino put the tape on it. If you can't fix it with duct tape, it don't need to be fixed, right? That's pretty cool, man. That's my way of fixing up things. Just duct tape it. It'll work. Before I get rolling, I just want to say thanks to everybody here, because I know I'll get ramped up and it'll be 8 o'clock and I'll have to end quickly. So I'll say it now before it gets to be our 9 o'clock. Thanks for everybody for having me. And you guys, you know, I've told Dino, I told a bunch of you in talking before and after the meeting. I mean, you guys are a pleasure to talk to. You guys, I mean, the lights are on, you know, and it's like it's actually a friendly environment, you know. It's nice. Some of these things, it's almost like a hostile environment, you know. Sometimes I'm thinking, am I speaking in English, you know? You ain't making that connection, you know. Well, last night at a treatment center in Dallas, I wanted to pat a couple of these. It was a rough crowd in there that kind of comes and goes, you know, and the week before, the weeks previous, these guys were all on fire and they're getting fired up and they're hearing the solution and they're jazzed up. And a lot of those guys had left. They had a whole bunch of new guys last night. And man, if I had some change on me, I would have given them some change and say, shit, call your next of kin, man. You're done, man. put those knuckleheads in your prayers, you know. So we're going to end up 10, 11, and 12 tonight. So I'm going to get right into the book, and, you know, forgive me, you know, my sponsor told me early on, when I first got my first guy to sponsor, I had like 27 days of sobriety, and this kid asked me to sponsor him, and I called my sponsor and told him that information, and he says, well, you didn't tell him no, did you? I said, well, no. I said, I haven't even got a 30-day chip yet. And he says, well, you're a good reader. Read the damn book. You can't screw it up. So that's why they wrote the book, to give us instructions, you know. So I'm going to start off on step 10, and we left off, you know, obviously at 9 last week, and they gave us the 9-step promises. And I like to read this stuff on 10, and I'll make some commentary as we go along, because this is huge. I love this stuff, and the promises, I mean, I know we got the little lampshades of the AA groups all over the place, and, you know, y'all got them up on the wall, and it's got the promises, right? And that's great stuff, all right? But depending on how you count, in the first 164 pages of the big book, there's like 300 and something promises, right? And so I don't want to just leave it to the 9-step promises. Those are great promises, signifying we've had a spiritual experience. But here in step 10, there's some promises that you can bet your life on. And you know, I spent a lot of years reading this book, not understanding it, and not understanding that this is what's going to happen if I follow these directions. So let's just get right into it. It says, this thought brings us to step 10, which suggests that we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. Right? So they're not giving us any new information here. We already know how to take care of inventory, right? We did it when we took a 4-step. We know how to set right our wrongs because we've learned how to do that, right? So it's not new information they're throwing at us here. And it tells us when we start our 10-step, it says, we vigorously commence this way of living as we cleaned up the past, right? Now, I got some friends at another faction of AA that will swear up and down that the big book says that you can't have a spiritual experience until you make all your amends, and you can't start step 10 until you make all your amends. And that's just not true. That's not what the big book says. The big book says as soon as I start my 9-step, I must start on step 10. Why? Because now I'm living today, right here, right now, and I can't afford to let resentments and fears and all that stuff pile up again on me, right? So this is what we're going to do in step 10. And it says, and we do this vigorously. Not a, look, I'm in a room full of vigorous drinkers back in the day, right? There ain't no teetotalers in this room. When we drank vigorously. So we know what that word is, right? And so it says, we vigorously commence this way of living as we cleaned up the past. It says, we've entered the world of the Spirit. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. Look, I'm just not going to all of a sudden be understanding and effective, you know? I mean, it's just not going to happen. We're going to grow. And it says, this is not an overnight matter. How long do you do your fifth step, or tenth step? It says it should continue for a lifetime. So from that day way back when till the day I die, hopefully, I do a tenth step. Right throughout the day. And I know there's some misconception. The last discussion I'm meeting, like I've been to 3 discussion meetings since I've been sober, right? 3. I was out of town all 3 times. The 3rd time was about 4 years ago. I was in Tulsa and they were doing a big book study, right? Our step study, and it was on step 10, and it was out of the 12 and 12. And not only did I not hear anything about the 10th step, it just the way it was crazy talk, you know? It's not in this book. Right? So we'll break it down. It tells you, it continues for a lifetime. Right? Then it's going to tell us what to watch out for. Continue to watch out for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. So we know how to do that. We've all done a 4-step. Right? No new information. And then I love this. When these crop up. Not if. Perhaps they'll crop up. No, they're going to crop up, man. We're humans. That's life. Resentments crop up. Fears crop up. When they crop up, now they're going to give us precise instructions on what to do, right? So we ask God at once to remove it, right? We say a prayer. We discuss them with someone immediately, right? This is where I pick up the phone and call my sponsor. If my sponsor's unavailable, I call one of my buddies that's in the program that's on the same path, and I run it by them, right? Make amends quickly if we've harmed anyone, right? If I offend Jorge, call Jorge a bad name because we got into an argument, and I owe him an amends, I make amends that day or as quickly as possible, right? Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Now, maybe that's somebody in AA. That's fine. But my sponsor tells me that means wherever I'm at. Maybe I'm at work. There's nobody in AA at my work, right? You know, so I can help, right? So it tells me exactly what to do. Ask God at once to remove them, right? Discuss it with someone immediately. Make amends quickly. Turn our thoughts to who we can help. That's a 10th step. How do I do it? Throughout the day. Simple, right? I leave the house in the morning, 10 o'clock, somebody hacks me off, and I say some words that I shouldn't say to another human being. You know, I'll give you an example. I wasn't sober very long, and there's this guy that I work with. He was a director in the company. He's a knucklehead, all right? And we, you know, we delivered high-dollar antiques. I installed artwork in all the fancy schmance houses in Dallas. That's what we did, you know, back in the day. And we had a whole load going to South Texas, and I'm packing this truck and can't break it. I mean, these were, you know, $50,000 armoires and stuff. You can't break them, you know. You can't damage them. At the very last minute, this guy throws a monkey wrench into the program and says, hey, we need to get this armoire on, and it needs to come off in Waco on your way down there. The lady's waiting, and I'm like, it's not going to happen. Because I already had my instructions from the owner of the company. He says it's got to happen, you know. So anyway, we go back and forth, right? I feel I'm right. He feels he's right. He throws a little hissy fit, you know, and I'm working with guys in the design district, so you can, I'll let your imagine take you there. So he throws a little hissy fit. He says some words that aren't too kind to me. And instead of me pausing, which I learned in the 11th step, I immediately retaliated, protected my turf, and told him what he could do with his idea. And I vaguely sensed I was not being any too smart, you know, as he walked away. And I'm walking away, and I feel right, and I'm mad. Now I'm all worked up and stuff. And as I'm walking away, I realize, God dang, I should not have said that to him. And my mind says, blow it off, screw him. You know, that's what my genius says, you know. But I'm thinking, no, I need to call the old man on this one. And so I called him, and I let him have it, and he started laughing at me like he always does. And he says, "You think that's the way he should be treated?" And I said, "Nope." And I said, "But I don't need to go make an amends to him, do I?" And he's like, "You know you owe him an amends." And he said, "Go pray about it. Go ask God to help you. And go take care of this immediately." So I went, the little time out in the bathroom, went to this guy's office. And I mean, I was hacked off when I told him. And I mean, I guess when I look angry, I look intimidating or something. Because I walked in, I knocked on his office door and I walked in. And I thought he was going to duck under his desk, you know. And I proceeded to, you know, make my amends. "Hey, David, I'm sorry we had cross words. You know, I had no right to say the things that I did to you. You know, I mean, after all, you are a director in the company. And I shouldn't have talked to you that way. Is there anything I can do to make that right with you?" And this guy changed. I mean, he started crying. But then he started to tell me, you know, I shouldn't have, you know, he had since called my boss and realized that he was in the wrong and all this stuff. And it was all patched up. Now, left to my own devices, I never would have done that. I would have blown it off. I would have been right. He would have been wrong. And that's the way it would have been. And we would have had a horrible working relationship. Instead, I trusted God, took the actions outlined in here, right? See, ever since the third step, my actions today show God I'm willing, how willing I am not to pick up a drink. See, I can rationalize this 10-step stuff. I can say, "Oh, yeah, I can say a prayer, and I already know what my sponsor is going to say." God wants to see me in action. I say the prayer, pick up the phone, take care of it. That shows God my willingness, right? Anything else is not a 10-step. That's a John Kelly step, and that gets me drunk eventually. You know, probably one of the biggest butt-chewings I've ever got in these 6.5 years is this stuff right here. I think I told it last week or the week before, but I'll kind of refresh your memory. You know, I wanted to go out of town to see my sister's kids. You know, when they come up to my mom's house, you know, I got to see them. You know, my little nieces, they adore me and I adore them, and it's just great. And I finagled my schedule at work and got off that Friday so I could spend the whole weekend. Had no business taking off that day, and had, you know, all this pressure from work. I had to get some deals closed. They weren't closing. Just pressure. And I went out of town doing it my way. Get up there. Her kids are sick. They're cranky. I'm not feeling that great. I'm cranky. You know, finally by Saturday, I'm like, "You know, Mom, I got to go." I had to go back to Dallas. Not once did I call my sponsor Friday. Not once did I call him Saturday. It wasn't until Sunday night coming home from 24-hour club that I finally called my sponsor and then told him the litany of stuff that was going on. And he let me get it all out, and then he just, we're on the phone, so if he were in person, he just kind of looked at me like my head was on fire, you know? And he says, "Who in the hell do you think you are? Like, you're some normal guy? Like, you could just let problems of, like, money and relationships, you could just let all those things just pile up, right, and just deal with it." No, he said, "You're not a normal person. You're an alcoholic. You're a chronic alcoholic. Your job is to do this 10-step stuff. You should have called me on Friday. You know, instead you waited 48 hours. He goes, "God, that stuff like this gets you and me drunk." And I don't know, I wasn't, you know, sober maybe in my first year of sobriety, and I bet 98% of the days since then is the day I call my sponsor. You know, and I don't call him for every friggin' hangnail and stuff like that. But I mean, I'm accustomed to calling my sponsor. Lots of times it's just to check in on him because his wife is ill and they're getting on up in age. The point is, I'm in the habit of talking to my sponsor. And when resentments, fears, worries come up, he's the first person I call. And I lay it out to him. God sees me in action, and I take care of it to the best of my ability. It says, love and tolerance of others is our code. Now here's all these promises. Check this out. "And we've ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. For this time, sanity will have returned. We'll seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we recoil from it as our hot, from it as it were a hot flame. We react sanely and normally, and we'll find that this has happened automatically." I'm not even thinking about it, you know? It just happens. We'll see that our new attitude toward liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. Now, I think back to all the other times, all those other 37 desire chips, all those other brief periods of sobriety that I had in the decade of the 90s. That never happened. It was always effort on my part. It was like wake up and the first thing I would think of is how in the hell am I going to get through this day without drinking? And me trying to manage myself not drinking until that finally blows up in my face and I drink again. Says there's no effort on our part. It just comes. That is the miracle of it. We're not fighting it. Neither are we avoiding temptation. We're not fighting it. How long have we tried to fight it? If you're like me, I tried to fight it for years and I always lose. What avoiding temptation? I think in treatment centers they call that making you a trigger list, right? You got to change your. They tell you to change your playmates, playthings, play. You know, where am I not gonna go, or where am I gonna go where I'm not gonna think about it? Left to my own device. I mean, remember Fred's story? What happened to Fred? He walked through a doorway. Now, how are you going to go through life? How am I going to go through life if I can't, if I got to think? Because Fred said he was on guard. His business had come off well. It was the end of a perfect day, not a cloud on the horizon. And he walked through, he says he crossed the threshold to the dining room. That's a doorway. How do you like to put doorways on your trigger list? How'd you like to put waking up? You know? That was always the first thing on my mind. I mean, where am I going to go? You know, it says, you know, we could be on the Greenland ice cap and would, you know, be tempted by, you know, I told you when I moved to Puerto Rico, I knew one person when I got off the plane. By the end of a week, I was like the mayor of Old San Juan. I knew every shady character there was, man. You know, I can find it, you know, given my, you know. It says we're not even going to have to deal with that. It says we feel as though we've been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We've not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. We're neither cocky nor we afraid. That is our experience. That is how we react so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition through work and self-sacrifice for others. That's it. That's promises. Now you think about it. If you go back to page 63, when we're at the turning point, or, you know, 59, we're getting ready to take the steps. I mean, I always do it from 63. Third step prayer, page 63. I just read the bottom of page 84, 85. I go from a hopeless state of mind and body to here in a matter of days. If you're friggin' struggling in Alcoholics Anonymous, if you're struggling, I mean, the one of the loneliest places I've ever been on this planet is to be an AA and not have a solution. That sucks. I can't live that way. Right? So this is 21 pages of work. You just got to ask yourself the question, is your life worth 21 pages of work? Y'all have read comic books bigger than that, right? It's pretty simple. It's not a long, drawn-out process. They say it early in the book in Bill's story. It says, simple but not easy. Right? And then it says, a price must be paid. You've got to ask yourself the question, what price did you pay to get here? Some of us, it was pretty steep. Most of us, it was pretty steep. Damn near cost me everything I had, and then some, and a lot of your stuff. You know? You can talk to my sainted mother about how much it cost me to get here, you know? They're paying $30,000, $40,000 for a big book, you know? Send me the treatment. So that's what happens if we follow these instructions, right? The very next paragraph tells you what happens if you don't follow these instructions. It is easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. Laurels, Greek for rear end. You know? See, it's real easy. Later in a couple pages we're going to read, it says we let God discipline this in the way we've just outlined us, right? How does God do that? By these steps, by these principles, right? If we're trying to adhere to these principles, we get discipline, right? If I'm not adhering to these principles, I get sober and I get some clean time under me and my life starts to change and I get the job and my car's running again and, you know, maybe I got a little sweetie pie and everything's rosy and everything like that. If I'm not following these principles, you know what happens to me, right? Pretty soon, it's not what God has done, it's look at me. Look what I'm doing. Oh, I've done this for so long. Maybe, you know, I need to take the night off and go to a Mavericks game. And maybe I don't drink that night and I do it again the next time and then the next time, you know, because I'm doing good, right? I'm doing good. Y'all are all telling me I'm doing good. My family's reunited and everything's doing good. No, I can't rest on what happened I've done in the past. I have today. My job today is to stay close to God, perform His work well. Today, no matter what. Right? Other than that, I would be resting on my laurels. It says, we're headed for trouble if we do, for alcohol is a subtle foe. How do they describe it? They call it cunning, baffling, powerful. Alcohol, lying in wait to ensnare. You know, just waiting, lurking, waiting for me to slip up. Isn't that how it always happens? You know, like they say, these old timers say, you ordered your drink long before you had your next drink, right? Yeah, because I started resting on my laurels, thinking, look what I've done, look what I'm doing. Yeah, I ordered that drink a long time before I picked it up, you know. Says, what we really have is a daily reprieve contingent upon the maintenance of our spiritual condition. And look what it says. Every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all of our activities. Every day. Not just on meeting day. It's easy to be a spiritual giant in AA and come to a meeting and think of something snappy to say and everybody pats you on the behind. But it's how we react in the real world. You know, we got to carry this vision into all of our activities. And that's a promise in the 12th step. It says, these are thoughts which must go with us constantly. Constantly. We can exercise our willpower along this line all we wish. It is the proper use of will. I'll go ahead and read this last little bit. It says, much has already been said about receiving strength, inspiration, and direction from Him who has all knowledge and power. If we have carefully followed directions, we have begun to sense the flow of His Spirit into us. Now, this ain't in the big book, but I call this the God groove. You know? I'm getting up and I'm saying my prayers in the morning. I'm asking God to direct my thinking. I'm out there. I'm out there helping other drunks. I'm being a contributor at my work. I'm being a contributor in my relationship, right? I'm doing these little things, right? And life just kind of clicks by. I'm kind of in that groove, you know? You know, the only way I can describe it other than that is like, I remember Michael Jordan. I think it was the last year he played, and because I remember the shot. They were in the playoff game in the NBA, the East Finals. They were playing Indiana, right? And Mike has an insane night. Reggie Miller's guarding him all night, and Mike is hitting three after three after three. And there's that one shot. The clock is winding down. Reggie Miller's in his face. Mike's way behind the 3-point line. Turns, shoots. And it is nothing but net. And the picture of Mike is this. I don't know. He's in the groove, man. See, that's how my life goes when I'm plugged in. You know, if I start fighting it, if I start getting frustrated and I'm getting fearful and I'm getting resentful and all that stuff, it's a sure signal that I ain't in God's will. I start having trouble. Look, I was talking to one of the guys before the meeting. He asked me what I do. I've been trading futures options on my own for the past couple of years. I taught myself with my own money. It's an expensive business proposition, right? I taught myself. Sometimes I'd get frustrated. My sponsor thinks my head's on fire for doing it in the first place, right? I get frustrated. And I call my sponsor. This sucks. I'm out of money. I got to make a whole pile of money in this week, you know, to you know, get what I need. And he says, look, you ain't in God's will, man. If God wanted you to be successful at this, it would happen. He goes, I'm not telling you not to do it. I'm just telling you that right now may not be the time. And I didn't like that. And I fought that for a while. Until I got to the position where I was like, you know what? I'm going to let it go. You know, I consulted with the hedge fund for a while. I got some other opportunities lined up. Maybe it'll happen. I don't know. I ain't fighting it. You know? There's a whole ton of opportunities out there, but there's only one of me. You know? I know normal people, they have all those books. It says, keep trying, don't give up, don't give up, don't give up. My sponsor tells me that's not for alcoholics. Now, he's not saying that I should just give up at the first sign of trouble. That's no way to live either. But if I'm doing my best and an opportunity doesn't work out, that might be the sign that it ain't for me, that I'm not in this flow, right? And then it says, step 11, suggest prayer and meditation. Now, you got to think about it. Bill writes this, and you remember how he felt going into like Ebby's meeting at his kitchen table at the end of November 1934. Bill didn't have too high opinion on God. He'd seen people gassed to death in World War I. People jump from the towers of high finance during the stock market crash. He was a drunken bum stealing money from his wife. You know, he didn't have a high opinion on God. But look what he writes in here. He tells us how to meditate. He tells us how we do this. And they give us specific instructions. My sponsor had me reading this like every day for the first month I was sober. He didn't want me to memorize it. He just wanted me to understand it and we would talk about it so that this stuff, this little template, this little concept here could be imprinted on my brain. Right? I don't do this right now. I do it, but I don't do it right out of the book like I did when I got started. Right? I've learned, I've developed my own way. This is what Bill... Look, if prayer and meditation. We all know what that... Prayer is me talking, meditation is me listening. If you want to get, you know, some yoga tapes and some incense and some bubble bath and do your med, fine. Right? But Bill's going to give us some stuff. This is the 11th step. And it says, when we retire at night, we constructively review our day. Notice that word, constructively. All right? So my 11th step is basically the catch-all for my 10th step. And I'm going to constructively review my day. I'm not going to kick myself in the rear end about, oh, I should have done this, you're a loser, you didn't. No, they're saying constructively, right? Were we, good questions to ask ourselves at the end of the day. Were we resentful, selfish, dishonest, afraid? Do we owe an apology? Have we kept something to ourselves which should be discussed with someone or another person at once? So they're asking me, have I done a good job on my 10th step? Is there something that I need to call my sponsor on? All right? Were we kind and loving toward all? That's a lofty goal right there. Like my sponsor said one time, he goes, I love each and one of you members of my group. There's some of you I don't like very well, though. that's a tough one, you know. Traffic in Dallas some days, that make Mother Teresa curse, I think, sometimes. Here's another one. Were we thinking of ourselves most of the time? Now, there's a tough one. I'm always thinking of me. I don't know. Look, I know y'all are all spiritual giants in here, but what was the first thing you thought of this morning? The first thing I thought of this morning was, like, I got to pee. I'm cold. What's something? It was about me. You know, I wasn't thinking of you. Or here's the flip side. Or were we thinking of what we could do for others? Now, there's another lofty goal. Am I helping you? What can I do for you? What can I do for this person to make their life better? What can I do for this person to help them out? Of what we could pack into the stream of life. Now think back when you were still drinking before you came in this time. How much were you packing into the stream of life? I was packing zero into the stream of life. I was drinking to live and drinking was killing me. Life was blowing by. I was not doing anything for you. I was not doing anything to help me. It was a blur. Now they're saying, what am I doing? What am I packing into the stream of life? It's pretty cool stuff. And then it says, but we must be careful not to drift into worry, remorse, morbid reflection. Don't worry about that stuff, right? After making our review, here's the first prayer. We ask God's forgiveness and inquire what corrective measures should be taken. So here's a good chance to catch up something I missed in my 10th step. Then it gives us instructions for in the morning on awakening. Right? Then it tells us we consider our plans for the day. Oh, I got big plans. How many of you had big plans and then you get the call from one of your proteges? My 5th step's done. Dang, I had big plans today. You know? It's day after Christmas, my first year, 1999. The phone rings. We're all having breakfast at my mom's house. Phone rings. It's for me. It was a guy at Homeward Bound. He was getting out the following day. Fifth step is done. Our fourth step is done. It's Christmas. I'm with my family, my little. My mom's like, "Who's that?" And I said, "Oh, it's one of my guys from my." He finished his fourth step. She said, "Shouldn't you go?" I'm like, "Dude, I'll be there like an hour and a half." You know, I considered my plans for the day. Hauled ass to Dallas from Gainesville. Heard a fifth step. Hauled ass back to Gainesville. It was a great day. All right? Here's this next prayer. We ask God to direct our thinking, especially that it be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, or self-seeking motives. Right? A lot of, you know, I tell my sponsor all the time, "Sponsor, I got a lot of good ideas." And he says, "I'm sure you do, John Kelly, but I hadn't heard any yet." You know? When I get a good idea, I run it by my sponsor, you know. A lot of times my bright ideas sound really good to me, but when I run it by him, he's like, "Well, God dang, that's incredibly selfish, you know. That's incredibly dishonest," whatever. All right? Under these conditions, we can employ our mental faculties with assurance. For after all, God gave us brains to use. And my sponsor said, "Scratch that out. That don't apply to you." I'm honest. I didn't just hear that from another speaker. He told me that, you know. And it says our thought life will be placed on a much higher plane, right? If when our thinking is cleared of wrong motives. Now here's some cool stuff. In thinking about our day, we may face indecision. We may not be able to determine which course to take. So I'm still in the morning. I'm considering my plans for the day, right? I may have something looming in the day that's causing me discomfort. Maybe it's a job interview. Maybe I got to go before the court. Whatever it is, right? Here we ask God for inspiration, another prayer, an intuitive thought or decision. We relax and take it easy. Notice where that's at. In the morning, in the 11th step, we relax and take it easy. We don't struggle. We're often surprised how the right answers will come after we have tried this for a while. So I got to practice. You know, I may face in some indecision. Take it easy. Later on down on the page on 87, as we go through the day, we pause when agitated. It's like one of the best five-letter words out there, pause. How do I react when something don't go my way? I get in your face. Right? Pause can definitely shorten your tenth step, I've found. You pause at the right moments for a long enough time and you ask God for the right thought or the right... We pause, right? Keeps me from doing a 10-step all day long with my son. Let's just keep the line open. I'm out in the real world, you know. When agitated, doubtful, and we ask for the right thought or action, we constantly remind ourselves that we are no longer running the show, humbly saying to ourselves many times each day, "Thy will be done." And I'm like a little AA robot sometimes. I will be done, you know. Sometimes I don't even mean it, you know. But look, I like this too. It says, we're then in much less danger of excitement, fear, anger, worry, self-pity, or foolish decisions. And I had to think about that when I first got sober. I kind of backtracked to thinking how I was living before I got sober. And it was all that stuff right there. Excitement, fear, anger, worry, self-pity, foolish decisions. Over and over, relentlessly. And I kind of thought back to one of those days, and it was always a struggle to kind of hide my drinking from you. So you couldn't, you know, worried if I, you know, if I'm standing in line at Tom Thumb, am I just reeking booze to the little kids behind, you know what I'm saying? Worry, remorse, morbid reflection. And I just would think about that, and I'm thinking, good God, that's why I was so tired. I was so defeated. Don't got to do that anymore. We're not that way anymore. It says we become much more efficient. We do not tire so easily, for we're not burning up energy as foolishly as we did when we were trying to arrange life to suit ourselves. Now here's a short paragraph and a really profound one. It works. It really does. Got to try it. We got to ask God for some persistence, you know, and try this for a while, you know. I'm not one of these guys that, you know, I got to be at work at 8 o'clock in the morning, so I get up at 5 and I've got 47 meditation guides. That's not me. I got some stuff that I read. I got some prayers that I say. But more importantly, I just like to give God thanks. Thank you for letting me wake up this morning without a bottle of vodka next to my head. That's a friggin' miracle, because that's the way I live, left to my own devices. I give God thanks. You know, I let him know how grateful I am that I have people like you in my life and my family back. And I just ask God to take away whatever stands in the way of my usefulness to him and to you. And I start my day. You know, sometimes I screw up and oversleep and rush out the door. You know, usually my day spirals out of control in a hurry, you know. Got to do one of those timeouts, go to the little bathroom at work or wherever it is in your car is good. You can do some good meditating in your car. Do some good meditating. You know, it's just practice. You know, we've been given a new chance and a new opportunity at life, so it's my job to practice these principles. Here's another miracle of understatement. We alcoholics are undisciplined. You betcha. So look what it says. So we let God discipline us in the simple way we have just outlined. If I get up tomorrow and try my best to follow these principles and call my sponsor and say the prayers and try to help you and be a part of society and try to pack what I can into the stream of life, that requires discipline. Me just running the show requires no discipline at all. I just do. Here, if I follow these instructions, there's discipline. It says, but that is not all. There's action and more action. Faith without works is dead. Like I said a couple weeks ago, I can pray myself to the liquor store. I can pray. You know, you've heard about the people sitting on the banks of the Mississippi River, right? And it's flood season. And the sheriff comes by in his four-wheel, right? And they're sitting out on the porch, the old couple. And he says, y'all need to evacuate. We've got the floods are coming. Oh, no, we're praying. God will take care of us. And he says, y'all need to evacuate. And they said, God will take care of us. We do, you know, we follow the book, you know. Sheriff drives on to help other people. Flood waters rise. Now they're on the pitch of the roof, you know. And now they're up on the porch and he comes by and now he's in a boat, you know. And he says, hop on the boat. Flood waters are rising. And he says, no, we're praying. God will take care of us. He goes on down the river. Next time he comes by, he's in a helicopter. They're on the pitch of the roof. They won't get on the helicopter because God's going to take care of them. They're praying. Well, hell, the silly folks drown. And they're at the pearly gates. And they're kind of ticked off that they died. And they go to St. Peter and says, we've been praying. Why did we die? And he says, my God, I sent you a four-wheel drive, a boat, and a helicopter. Take some action, you know. You got to take some action, you know. It's all about action, folks. And that's what this right here, chapter 7, working with others. They got a whole chapter devoted to the 12th step. Sounds like it's probably important, right? I'm so grateful for my sponsor because he didn't care what my little feelings were. He didn't care if I thought I was shy. He didn't care. I said I was willing to go to any length to get what he got. And he put me in the game. He got me off the bench, off the back row, and gave me stuff to do, stuff to read, and he gave me the instructions for a program of living that has changed my life. And I thank him for that every day, you know, because without him, you know, I'll sit on the back row every time, you know, and become an AA guru, and I'll die drunk. It says, practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity as drinking from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. Just like we drank vigorously, I drank intensively. And this says intensive work with other alcoholics. But let's just see in the big book, in the textbook, where they first mention it. And I know one right off the bat. It's not even in the real number pages. It's on Roman numeral 16, the very, very bottom. It says, this seems to prove that one alcoholic could affect another as no non-alcoholic could. It indicated that strenuous work, one alcoholic with another, was vital, necessary for life, to permanent recovery. Hadn't even got to the real pages, and they tell us what our mission is. Go into Bill's story. You know, page 14. For if an alcoholic fails to perfect and enlarge his spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice for others, he could not survive the certain trials and low spots ahead. If he did not work, he would surely drink. If he drank, he would surely die. With us, it's just like that. Bill, by the way, Bill enters the hospital December the 11th, 1934. He gets out December the 17th, 1934, and this is what he thought of. My wife and I abandoned ourselves with enthusiasm to the idea of helping other alcoholics to a solution of their problems. I didn't have an experience like that in my last time in treatment. Bill did. That's why we're here. I'll come back to that page. And it says, it works, and back in chapter 7, it says, it works when other activities fail. I'm going to try other activities. You know, Bill tried, I mean, I can imagine Bill, 1934, he gets out of town's hospital. He starts to get a little resentment or fearful or depressed or whatever, and Bill's like jogging around Central Park, you know, doing push-ups, maybe goes to a movie, you know. Yeah. He's got to go down the Bowery and work with a drunk. It saves the day, right? That's what happened to Bill. That's what he did, right? That's what happens in my life. I'll try anything. I'll go buy some new Nikes. I'll do this. I'll do that. And I realize, you know what? I need to be out where I need to be out amongst my people, you know? This is it. It says we've recovered and been given the power to help others. Page 132. Be pretty sorry, don't you think, for me to get recovered, to look up into the God of my understanding and say, hey, thanks, pal. I got it from here. Turn my back on you. I don't know if you believe in karma, but that's some bad karma right there. It says, this is our 12th suggestion. Carry this message. Notice what message they're talking about. They're talking about this message as outlined in this book. Not my message. Not some friggin' Dr. Phil message. Not some therapeutic message. Not some inner child message. They're talking about this message. The message that they went to such masterfully detail to get in this book so we could have instructions. Carry this message to other alcoholics. You can help when no one else could. Who could help you? Who could help me? No one. Except another alcoholic. When I was in treatment or in counseling, as soon as I found out that they didn't do what I did to get booze, my mind snapped shut. Whether that's right or wrong doesn't make a difference. As soon as I realized they weren't an alcoholic, the wagons were circled so tight around my life, you know, if you weren't me, you didn't know about me. But who cracked the nut was my sponsor. He'd been where I was at. He'd been recovered and been given the power to help me. He'd been where I was at. And now he was at a place where I wanted to get to. You know? It's pretty cool. It says, life will take on new meaning. For me, life will take on a meaning. My group is the primary purpose group, right? And I found my special purpose, kind of like Steve Martin, you know? I found my special purpose, you know? You got to go way back in movie history to catch that one. But look what it says, to watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow up about you, to have a host of friends, this is an experience you must not miss. We know you will not want to miss. Probably the coolest thing is this stuff right here. A, I did have a meaning in life. I got a purpose now. I was designed for the reason to do all those knucklehead things for all those years and to break all those hearts and create all that damage to get me to a spot to where I could rely on this power. And now that I'm relying on the power, now I can go out to this guy or that guy or that guy, and these guys jump on board, right? And now, little by slowly, the fellowship that I crave develops around me. They're not talking about the fellowship, you know. See a lot of damage in that other fellowship. A lot of gossiping, a lot of negative energy, a lot of stuff. What they're talking about is, you know, you look back at the history of AA, man, these cats stuck together. They had a common problem, they had a common solution, and they stuck together. And they were wildly successful. And we're not doing that as a whole today. I got my first guy to sponsor right off the bat. That one became another one, right? I'm constantly, every day, going through this book with a newcomer. You know, that's how I learned the damn book. Practice. And as we study the book in my group, and as I'm studying it with my newcomer guys, my little prospects turning into proteges, these promises that are so neatly written in this book, these are becoming apparent that they're happening or have happened in my life. And to see those little buckaroos, they grow and those promises come into their life, that's what they're talking about. That's the experience you must not miss. There's this guy out, his name is Ben. Why they ever let Ben out of prison, I do not know. Ben was an angry guy. Hated you. Hated people. I met him in 96 at this little treatment center. We tried to get sober together, you know, at that treatment center. And so here I am in 99 or year 2000, and I run into old Ben again. Ben sits in the back row, arms crossed, not a ray of hope in his life, you know. And he hears us talking at this little treatment center week on, week out, you know. And finally, after a couple of weeks, Ben comes up to me and asks me to take him through the work. And Ben was a slow project. Ben don't comprehend what he reads too well. So I basically had to sit down with Ben and take him through line by line in this book. And Ben started to work these steps. And Ben did a fourth step. And Ben did a fifth step. And I hammered him. And during that fifth step, the little light bulb came on. You know? And Ben starts to change. And I'd make Ben, he didn't have a car at the time, and for a few weeks, and I'd take Ben to our meetings. And I'd stand out there with Ben every day. And we'd get there like 6:30, and we'd talk to every son of a gun that walked into our meeting. Ben, John, I hate talking to these people. Good. Introduce yourself to every one of them, man. And we tried this, right? And little by slowly, Ben starts to change. Ben starts to change. These promises are coming in his life. For the first time in his life, he's got hope. And that's kind of amazing, right, in and of itself. But I'm sitting there on a Friday night. We just got through doing our talk. I've given Ben a ride to this treatment center. And me and Myers do our little thing and all this stuff. And we're talking after the meeting. Guys are huddled up in twos and threes and passing out numbers and stuff. Myers is talking to me about something. And I look over, and Myers is facing me, and I look over, and I see Ben. Ben, the guy who doesn't like people. The guy who doesn't, he left to his own devices, he'd kill us all, you know. And I'm not joking. But I see this guy getting out some paper and writing his number down. And he has some little red books, and he's giving out these red books. And I start to cry, and Myers goes, "What are you crying for?" And I'm like, "Check it out." And Myers turns around and looks, and he's like, "Oh my God. See, that's what God does. You know, God's got a plan. You know, I don't look at these guys. I mean, I end up sponsoring, the guys I sponsor are just like me, bottom of the barrel, end of the liners. Most of my guys come to me on crutches, you know, or wobbling, you know, barely detoxed. The book here outlines what we're supposed to do, how we're supposed to do it. It tells me precisely how I lay out this program. I don't go to a new guy and say, "Look what God's doing for me. Let me tell you about my spiritual experience." That's what Bill did in the beginning. Remember? If you read the history on it, Bill got sober and he'd go down to the Bowery and work with all these drunks, and he'd tell them about his hot flash experience in Towns Hospital. Now, how were you when you were drunk or hungover and people started talking to you about God? If you were like me, your mind snapped shut. Theirs did. Nobody was getting sober. Bill comes home frustrated one night and says, "God dang, Lois." He was frustrated. She says, "Why are you frustrated?" She says, "Look, I'm out there trying to help these guys. Nobody wants it." And she's like, "Hello, you're sober. You know, why don't you go talk to Silkworth?" And he goes to Silkworth and he says, "None of these guys are staying sober." And Silkworth says, "What are you telling them?" "Tell them about my experience here in Towns Hospital." He says, "Bill, you got the cart before the horse. You got to lay out the hopelessness of the situation. Give them a good case of alcoholism." See, that's what we do with the newcomer. I sit down with a new guy. The guy expressed some interest. I sit down. I find out all I can about him. It ain't my job to pat him on the behind and tell him, "I'm going to love you into sobriety. You just keep coming back, buckaroo." Doesn't say that in this book. It tells me I lay out the problem as I see it. I stress the hopelessness of the situation. I tell them about my story. This is where my 12-step, or my war stories come into play. I tell them about the times that I've tried to stop and failed. He begins to match some of his inconsistencies with mine, right? He's identifying with me. And finally, before long, he realizes that I drank as much booze or more than he ever dreamed of. And finally, this guy with a good case of alcoholism looks me dead in the eye and says, "You're just like me. How in the hell do you stay sober?" Now I got him. Now I get to lay out the program of action outlined in this book. This man says he's willing to go to any length to get what I got. We make a decision. We make a commitment in step 3. Right? That he's going to get off his rear end and do this work. And then I take him through the work. Simple. That's our job. But not only is that my job, it says in the 12th step that I've got these principles in all my affairs. You know, I can't be the guy that goes, you know, I cussed out my girlfriend today, kicked the dog, yelled at my boss, but I didn't drink today and I'm a complete success. No, I'm a sober prick. You know? It says we've got to practice these principles in all my affairs. So that means at work, with people I don't even know. I mean, think about this. I'm running out of time. I'll end on this. And then I'm going to read another promise. But think about your 4-step. Think of the people, how many people you had on your 4-step, right? And I don't know what the last census was, but let's say the United States has 300 million people, right? And they estimate that 10% of the population is alcoholic. Well, if 10% of the population is alcoholic and we all do 4-steps, right? You look at all of our 4-steps, right? Way more than 300 million. You follow my drift? That means our lives as alcoholics touch everybody in this society. Everyone. You go to the mall tomorrow and walk up to 100 people, and you won't find one that life has not been altered by alcoholism. They're either married to one of us, they got a kid, they got a grandfather, somebody was killed by a drunk driver, they've had to fire drunks. Alcoholism touches everybody on this planet. So it's our job, it's my job to practice these principles to the best of my abilities in all my affairs. You know, that's what the steps allow us to do. You know, and God allows us to repair that damage. God allows us to have a life and to become whole in our societies again. We can contribute instead of sucking everything we can out of life. You know, now we've got a purpose. I got a purpose. But I'm going to end on this. Look what it says on page 100. Both you and the new man must walk day by day in the path of spiritual progress. And I'll tell you where I found this. I wasn't sober too long. It was on a Sunday. I got up that day. I mowed the lawn at the house that I was living in. I mowed the lawn. I washed my little beat down car that I had. Cleaned it all out. I went up to Homer Bound. Did step work with 2 or 3 guys, right? Got home. I called my mom. The Cowboys had lost, you know. So I was like, oh, they suck, you know. Painted my kitchen. Right? And it's all by 6 o'clock in the evening, right? And I'm calling my sponsor and I said, man, I can't tell you, this is amazing. I've done more today than I had the previous 10 years. I mean, who would have thought? And he says, good job. Repaid 100. Click. This is it. Both you and the new man must walk day by day in the path of spiritual progress. If you persist, remarkable things will happen. We realize when we look back, we realize the things which come to us, we put ourselves in God's hands, were better than anything we could have planned. Follow the dictates of a higher power and you will presently live in a new and wonderful world, no matter what your present circumstances. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, this works. It sure seems to. Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.